The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, no karaoke for me.
It shouldn't be for me.
Absolutely for sure.
It shouldn't be for me either, Anthony, but not that it stopped me, which I think is
that's
what some
okay.
of
You're
the debate
allowed
is
to.
About.
You're
yeah,
allowed to.
Exactly.
I think we'll give you permission. I'm just a guest here, Howard, so there's definitely no karaoke for me. But apparently, according to the reports, there was serious violence that was averted yesterday along the Gaza border. Apparently, there were 1,000 protesters who gathered alongside the Gaza side of the border fence. The IDF were forced to intervene in order to prevent people from encroaching too near to the fence in an attempt to try to avoid the events that took place over last weekend. There was tear gas used. There were apparently even live rounds used in some particular cases. 14 people are reported to have been injured on the Palestinian side, on the Gaza side of the border. That is what we know at the moment. There were, of course, reports from the Gaza media that the protests were peaceful. According to what we understand, not so peaceful, burning tires right towards the security fence. But this time around, it seems as if though things were kept relatively under control. It's not over yet by any stretch of the imagination.
So, yeah, and of course we know what happened. When was it? 2012 on the Gaza border. This became a major,
right.
major global, a major incident that that did tremendous damage to the whole peace process, if such a thing even
absolutely happened. Absolutely. I mean, what we don't want right now is to unnecessarily destabilize the situation. We need to confront the issue in order to just to try to prevent people from coming too close to the border, potentially even trying to cross over the border fence. We've certainly had a few cases like that. In fact, there was one that was reported about yesterday, an individual trying actually to get through the fence, over the fence. I'm not quite sure how they would do that. It's quite a substantial fence. So obviously, every attempt to try to prevent that from happening. Defense Minister Benny Gantz has said, you know, all we really want is A, for our boys and for our citizens to be returned from Gaza, and B, just to keep peace along the fence, keep peace between the people. And of course, I think, you know, between the lines, we would like to have a situation where we can help them to develop the economy, to feed their people, to allow goods and services and medical facilities to be undertaken in a normal fashion, without feeling that every little thing that you give, every little concession that you make, is being used against you in order to either turn it upon you and to risk the lives of our citizens on our side of the fence, or to potentially use it as a PR event in order to turn things against us, which is the way that we feel right now. It's a huge dilemma that we experience, because on the one hand, we really want to just open things up and allow things to flow and give people what they want and improve lives. On the other hand, we know that every time we potentially give a concession, we're going to pay dearly for that. So, you know, that is the dilemma that we face right now.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has met with senior officials from the U.S. administration ahead of his meeting today with President Joe Biden. Right, what's on the agenda?
Yeah, it's interesting again because it's a slightly different approach from the one that we've seen in prior years. When Prime Minister Netanyahu in his day went to Washington, we wouldn't necessarily hear reports about him having met with anybody other than the president himself. That would be the main event. Naftali Bennett went a few days before. He has met with the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. He has met with the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Those meetings were well publicized. It's not considered to be beneath his station to meet with people who are not the head of the government, who are not the head of the administration. He's happy to get involved in some of the details of what goes on in different areas, defense or State Department or whatever it is. Apparently, the meeting with Lloyd Austin, the U.S. Defense Secretary, went well. Once again, Lloyd Austin was at pains to point out that Israel's security is very much in the U.S. interest, and that the U.S. Will be doing everything that it can in order to allow Israel to defend itself with all that it needs. Also critical of what's going on with Iran. So, you know, he also reiterated that the Iranian nuclear threat is one of the most pressing issues on his agenda. So I think that we heard from Lloyd Austin, or at least Naftali Bennett, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, heard from the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, all the words that we would hope to hear in terms of getting U.S. military support. Similarly, the meeting with Secretary of State Antony Blinken seems to have gone very positively. And interestingly, one of the main items on the agenda that was reported upon is this issue of potentially entering into a visa waiver program for Israelis to be able to visit the U.S. without the need to get a visa. Not only is it a convoluted and a difficult process, but it's also quite costly, takes time. And so if Israelis are able to enter the U.S. without visa, without the need for a formal visa, obviously there is a process one has to go through even when you're in the visa waiver program. But apparently that was one of the main issues on the agenda. And according to the statistics that I read, the overstay rate of Israelis around the world is quite low, which is something that I would have thought to be exactly the opposite. Yeah, I would have thought that Israelis try their luck.
That's incredible.
But the overstay rate apparently around the world is 0.5%, whereas in order to enter into the visa waiver program, and there is this percentage that's set, it has to be less than 2%. So apparently, in terms of that, we do qualify. There's still some work to be done. And of course, we're looking forward to hearing more about the meeting with President Joe Biden that's due to take place today. Even though I know, and we've spoken about it, some people are somewhat cynical about what the purposes of this meeting will be and how much we can really rely upon the U.S. administration in general and upon President Joe Biden in particular. Not only how much we can potentially rely on him, but potentially how much anybody can rely on him in the wake of recent events. I think it's important for us to continue to have a good relationship with the U.S., no matter what the current circumstances are. And it seems as if Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is very determined to make sure that that will be the case.
Do you think there's any sort of off-the-record or quiet meetings about assisting in Afghanistan at all?
I'm not quite sure to what extent Israel wishes to be involved in Afghanistan. We've heard numerous reports about Israeli weapons that are in use in Afghanistan through sales of weapons that have gone to one group or to another. I suspect that those sales were not directly to parties involved in Afghanistan, but may well have gone through third and fourth and fifth parties as weapons brokers, and who ultimately allowed them to get to Afghanistan. And so I don't know to what extent Israel really wants to get involved, to be associated with any of the events in Afghanistan. I think that in terms of where we're at right now, we would be better off just keeping to our own business and not getting too involved in Afghanistan. Having said that, it's interesting that the U.S. Defense forces were reported quite recently to have tested out an Israeli Iron Dome system for their own use for the first time. That was reported a week or two ago. Now, again, I have no idea whether that has any relevance to Afghanistan whatsoever. I know that, you know, as much as the U.S. is supporting Israel militarily, apparently there's a two-way street going on, that it's not only a one-way system. I don't imagine that Afghanistan will be of major interest to Israel other than to make sure that whatever goes down in Afghanistan doesn't somehow spread out and have any impact on our part of the world.
Yeah, I would imagine that is a priority. Taking a look at the COVID situation with booster shots now for the over 30s.
So more than 1.5 million Israelis, 1.7 million actually, have already received the third booster dose of the vaccine, which became available at the beginning of August. As of now, third doses, as you rightly point out, are available to all Israelis over the age of 30. That is expected to change over the course of the next few days to allow even younger people to get the booster dose. We yesterday hit almost a new high in terms of the number of new people being tested for corona, more than 10,000 people in one day. That's almost the peak that was reached in the third wave. That was back in January. We reached more than 10,000. This time around, we have approximately 1,000 people who are seriously ill, hospitalized, and 688 in serious conditions. So the numbers have definitely gone up substantially during the course of this fourth wave, in spite of most people having been vaccinated. The numbers, however, are not nearly as big in terms of seriously ill people as they were when we reached that peak in January of more than 10,000 people a day being diagnosed. So there is no doubt that, you know, vaccines are definitely helpful. And the third vaccine, quite some interesting statistics were advertised on TV. They claim that after 16 days of getting the third booster, the protection against infection jumps to 95%, and that something like 97% of people who get the third booster dose will be protected against severe illness. There is, however, an elephant in the room on this particular topic, and the elephant in the room is the World Health Organization, that has asked the world to stop vaccinating, effectively the first world to stop vaccinating, and certainly been very vociferous against those countries like Israel who are getting third doses, saying we need to stop all of that and allow those people around the world who have yet to receive any vaccination to get the vaccine that they need, and for everybody to become vaccinated. It's an interesting discussion, and I'd be happy to hear what people have to say about it. From our perspective, all I would say is that I don't think we have any guarantees that by denying those 1.7 million who've received the vaccine to date, I'm not sure that we would get any guarantee that those vaccines would be equitably distributed around the world to those people who have not yet received the vaccine. I know that there is a shortage of vaccine, but I think the production facilities have really kicked in, and there's much more vaccine available now than was the case before. Do people think that Israel needs to stop giving the third dose because there are poorer countries around the world that haven't received vaccine at all, or sufficient vaccine to give their people even a first or second dose? I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on 34519 or 0618951019. Should countries like Israel not proceed with the third dose, given the fact that many countries around the world have not yet really kicked in their vaccination programs properly? I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Just another point on this. I was very fascinated to hear from Albert Bourla, who of course is the CEO of Pfizer and become very much associated with the vaccine program and very closely associated with Israel for various reasons. We know that Prime Minister Netanyahu in his day worked very, very closely with Albert Bourla. There's a quote that Albert Bourla says he was called 30 times in one day by Prime Minister Netanyahu at the time to get into the bits and bytes of what's going on. But aside from that, it was interesting to hear his assessment of why Israel was chosen to be kind of the laboratory for all of this. First of all, because it's a relatively small country. Second of all, because the health system is such that allowed the vaccines to be rolled out pretty quickly, and also to be recorded in a very pedantic way. And then third of all, to allow research statistics information to be gathered very, very quickly and very reliably. And interestingly enough, apparently Sweden was one of the candidates that could have been the testbed for the Pfizer vaccine, but he decided against it because it would have caused some political issues within the European Union, that Sweden was potentially being preferred over other European Union countries, and hence Israel was the obvious choice for Pfizer. Interesting assessment.
Absolutely incredible. Yes. Tell us, before we let you go, tell us about the Paralympics.
Yes. So we spoke about the Paralympics yesterday, and lo and behold, we have a fantastic story to talk about. And the story involves an Israeli Arab Paralympian, Iyad Shalabi, the very, very first Israeli Arab to win an Olympic medal. He won gold yesterday in the backstroke event, and in the 100-meter backstroke event, and he competes in the S1 disability classification. He is a man who was born deaf-mute to a Muslim family from Shfaram, and he was also paralyzed following an accident at the age of 13, as if though being deaf and mute wasn't bad enough, he was also paralyzed. But yet he has overcome this disability amazingly. And today he is an Olympic gold medalist for the 100 meters backstroke in the S1 classification. Congratulations, Mazel Tov. It's a fantastic story, and we are immensely proud of him having achieved that. He did actually get fourth place, both in Beijing and in London, narrowly missing out on medals, but now he is an Olympic gold medalist.
Absolutely incredible, and what a beautiful note to leave it on. Anthony Reich, thank you for the week of reporting. Have a fantastic weekend. Have a Shabbat Shalom, and we will catch you on Monday morning.